Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson, Baltimore, Baltimore Positive. I am enjoying my Royal Farms coffee today. We got plenty of things on our mind, and a sports week ahead. I mean, crazy, crazy sports week. I mean, the Ravens are the centerpiece of Sunday Night Football. Buffalo Bills coming in, interesting matchup, interesting fans, all of that, and then of course, Orioles and the Yankees all week in Minnesota, and where the Orioles are going to be come next Tuesday, come next Wednesday and Thursday as the Ravens prepare for Cincinnati. Luke's preparing for another birthday. My kid just turned 40. My birthday's coming up. We're taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on the road this week to Costas. I was wearing my Costas gear. I am wearing my State Fair in Catonsville shirt right now because we had a cancellation, second cancellation with Angela Alsobrooks, Prince George's County executive. We're going to be there this week, not going to be there this week. So apologies for anybody who made plans to join us on Tuesday. But on Friday, we will be at Costas. I will have Maryland Crab Cake tour. People, fun, Dundalk, Homeland. I got Teresa Gutierrez coming over, so it's going to be fun. Maryland Lottery scratch-offs from the Ravens. The Ravens two times. We had a $20 winner at Fadley's last Friday when John Sarbanes and James Bond and Damian Hahn joined me for the Oyster Recovery Partnership. I'm out on the road doing that on behalf of our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions. 1-800 Clean Water. I keep holding the water up here because they keep my water clean and well water clean. Make sure you're finding them at Liberty Pure Solutions. And Jiffy Lube Multicare, who powers Luke up, just like Royal Farms powers my coffee up at this point. And I want to have a wise conversation right now, Luke. And sometimes in the aftermath of these crazy football games where these crazy endings, and it feels like every week, 22-point lead, crazy ending. You called it, and I hope you coined this with the Baltimore Ravens. Would you say experience? What was your line?
I think it was the Baltimore Ravens football experience, which, I
What
mean,
that
now
define that for me, Luke, please, for everyone.
it's what we've seen now the last few years. I mean, this is a great football team in the regular season, or has been. I'm not saying they are at this moment, right? They've got things to clean up. But the numbers speak for themselves, right? I mean, over the last few years, when Lamar Jackson's healthy, they're really, really good in the regular season. But we also find that they have a few too many performances like this, where it looks like they're on their way to dominating a team, but they get to the fourth quarter or the second half, and things start to go sideways. And the problem is, and the concern is that, you know, 2 weeks in a row now, specifically, but even going back the last few years, when things go sideways, when things start to go turn on their head, it happens across the board. Like to the point where it almost feels like they're bracing for something bad to happen. What's going to happen next? Who's going to get called for a penalty? Who's going to shank a kick? Who's going to blow a coverage? You know, whatever. You know, who's going to throw an interception? Who's going to fumble the football? Like, whatever it might be. It's just like it starts going in the opposite direction, and then you're doing everything you can to stop it, but you can't. That's why I do give them credit, albeit not emphatically, because it shouldn't have come to this, but that Lamar Jackson completion is a flowers. You know, if you squint and you kind of move away from the screen, looked a little bit like Joe Flacco to Anquan Boldin or Derek Mason on the outside in a big moment. I mean, you know, that's not what the Ravens do consistently. You know, Lamar much better throwing to the middle of the field, but hey, for all the talk about him not being able to throw outside the numbers, at least earlier in his career, made a big throw there against tight coverage. So, but that's the experience, right? I mean, it's we all know the graphic by now, and Fox put it up on the screen. You know, where, you know, looking at the Ravens, most losses since 2021 with having at least a 7-point lead in the fourth quarter. I mean,
You get
we've seen it
fired if you
over
put
and
that on the
over and
screen at
over again.
Masson, right? Literally, right?
So, sure, but I mean, it's there, and it keeps happening. And fortunately, they won. You hope that they've learned their lesson, because I mean, the reality is every team is different. Every season is different. Those losses that they had in 2022, look at the roster. There's a lot of turnover that's happened since then. But for the guys who remain, you know, whether you're talking about players or coaches, it just happens too much. But that's part of the Baltimore Ravens football experience. And for good or bad, that is what it is. But you just hope that 2 weeks in a row this happening, you hope the message gets through that you got to play 60 minutes. And you know, they didn't do that, but at least Lamar Jackson and Zay Flowers, that That play there, that I mean, that saved them. And then, of course, they were in victory formation after Lamar's run a couple plays later. But whew, it shouldn't have come to that for anyone who watched this team over the first, 47 minutes of that football game. No way it should have come to that.
The Baltimore Ravens football experience, the BRFE. I'm BRFE, Baltimore Luke, September 23rd, 2024. For me, what you write as the Baltimore Ravens football experience, which is the roller coaster. As I pointed out, I said it's almost like a Sunday theme park ride, sort of the House of Mirrors, the Tilt-A-Whirl, or whatever it is. Consistency, the C word, right? Like that when you're consistent, you're up 22 points. Lamar's wearing sunglasses and the hat he bought in Fort Worth the night before on the sidelines and smoking a cigar like Joe Burrow with his, there's called grills. Am I still calling that by the right? Is that the right term? Grills that Lamar
I
was wearing?
guess.
Whatever.
You're asking a 41-year-old guy. I don't know.
Well,
Or almost 41.
whatever it is, the victory grills, the victory 10-gallon hat, the handshake with Dak Prescott and say, you got all the endorsements, but I beat your ass. Like all of that should have, to me, 22-point lead. I'm nuts about Lamar running the ball there. Like, that's insane to me. Insane to me that he's running with a 22-point lead on the road in the middle of the third quarter, that they don't have a better play than that at that point in the game. That being said, the fact that he's running up the middle at the 2-minute warning in the same game is way further insane to me. Because even when he did it, I thought, well, he won't be doing that later because they'll score again. It'll be 35 to like, and this they'll laugh and go home. That's what consistent teams do. That's not what this football team did this week. Certainly, they weren't capable of beating Kansas City 2 weeks ago, even by tippy toe. They weren't capable of beating the Raiders last week, and they squandered a game. Now they have Buffalo and Cincinnati. They're getting measured on all of this, but the consistency is the problem. And then that Lee, and we could talk about the offensive line. It played better. Harbaugh. Hi, John. Nice to hear from you last week. The fire Harbaugh stuff in the aftermath of all of this, and the fact that that graphic comes up, I literally thought to myself, like, when this thing was starting to go the other way, and they needed that Zay Flowers pass because they were in quicksand, and if the defense had to come back out on the field again, I have a feeling it wouldn't have gone well, right? Like literally, if the Zay Flowers pass sails on Lamar or something goes wrong there, they probably punt the ball, right? I mean, like, and we got a real situation on our hands to tie the game at the very least, right? So, like, I'm thinking to myself, I'm watching Harbaugh sort of freak out on the sidelines, and I'm thinking, oh my God. I mean, you talk about it, a franchise earthquake. That's never happened before because they're always pissing away games like this when they're 7-2, or, Lamar throws a pick against the Giants late in the game and they blow it. They still wake up 5-2 the next day, or they don't wake up 0-2 all week. So much so that I'm hearing from the head coach and thinking about potentially going 0-3 in front of Tom Brady after blowing a 22-point lead. Like that thing was teetering in a way that I'm like, oh my God, I've not seen this from this fourth loss in a row. They went so far, say Lamar's never lost 3 games in a row. They missed the championship game. They've lost three. They were had lost 3 games in a row and were teetering with a 22-point lead that was down to 3 and needing to make a Flacco to Bolden back shoulder pass and still needing Lamar to go sleight of hand to run to get a first down at the end of a football game. The C word, consistency, coaching. What I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know, but you could praise the offense, but this fire Harbaugh thing that I get on Twitter and whatever, it's ha ha ha, whatever. But he's closer to the end than the beginning, and an 0-3 or a 1-3 next Monday or a 1-4, it's starting to get like this starts to feel sloggy even when they win. Like, I don't know what I expect out of them Sunday night against Buffalo. I really don't. I know Buffalo's decent, right? I mean, they're good, they're fine. I shorter rest, wherever it would be with them, and you could say, but I don't expect them to just go freight train Buffalo or Cincinnati 2 weeks from now out there, despite all of their turmoil, injuries, wherever we find the Bengals a week from now. These are really tough games, and if they're 3-2, Harbaugh's going back to the Hall of Fame again, and Lamar's on an MVP track, and it means Derrick Henry's running the ball. It means the defense is doing defensive things. It probably means Tucker's making a couple of kicks the next 2 weeks, and it probably means our biggest problem, and I know you want to talk about this, was the offensive line, right? Like all the rest of it, I feel like Hamilton's banged up. Roquan will figure it out. The pass rush was decent. Van Noy's playing with two holes in his head. Henry ran the ball. Like there's signs of life here all the way through when you are up 22 points in the third quarter on the road against Dallas. But then there's the what are we going to get next? And where's the coaching and where's the consistency in all of this? And I really think this offensive line, if you take anything bright out of the victory, like it awakened and maybe these are the five guys that'll be here for the next couple of weeks.
We'll see. I mean, it's a week-to-week league, right? I mean, we can try to, what happened against Kansas City and then what happened against Vegas. And then you see what happens to the Raiders the following week. And Dallas gets blown out by the Saints. And then the Saints look so incredibly average against Philadelphia at home. I mean, you don't know, right? I mean, you're still trying to figure this out. And that's part of this. I think the elements are there for this team to be very good. I still think that. But yeah. I'll look at the offensive line. And this is where they deserve some praise. For as much as we were beaten up, and not just when I say we, not just you and me, everyone, fans, other, and I mean, national analysts looking at this offensive line and, people questioning why isn't Roger Rosengarten playing and where's Ben Cleveland and are they really going to stick with Falele at right guard? They went out and played well. Now, I will stress, and we've talked about this. Lamar Jackson threw a career low number of passes on Sunday for games that he started and finished.
One of the reasons
15.
Falele looks so good.
And look, and I don't want to just pick on him individually because, hey, he did a nice job. Like, for as much as I'm going to crush, people will crush him when he
Well, you're like, why
struggles.
is he out there? Because they want a 6'8", 340-pound guy making things happen for Derrick Henry so he can run for 125 yards, right? Like, I guess. I mean, that's kind of
I
what the goal
guess.
is, right?
At the same time, I'm not sure you're not going to convince me that the way that they played on Sunday, first of all, they're not going to be able to win like that every week. And we're 6 years into this. You got to be able to throw the ball and have a functional passing game and things like that. And they did that last year. I mean, Lamar Jackson won MVP. He didn't run for 1,200 yards last year, right? So they did that. They took steps forward in that way, much more. I think what we saw Sunday specifically was very much dependent on Micah Parsons, but also Dallas's front just being really soft, not very physical, clearly didn't want to tackle. We saw that. I mean, whether it's Derrick Henry or Nelson Aguilar or Lamar or Justice Hill, they didn't want to tackle. I mean, they just did it. And that's something that I will say because I made this comparison last week. And again, I want to be fair here. As much as we're criticizing elements of this that warrant criticism, I also want to be fair here because I made a comparison and I said, not that I thought it was a carbon copy, let's be very clear. But in some ways, the Cowboys in recent years, in some ways, have been a little bit like the Ravens in the sense that they've had a lot of regular season success, but they've gotten to January and they've fallen on their face. Now, the Cowboys have been more extreme in that regard. For example, look how they played at home against the Packers last January. So I don't want to say this was a carbon copy, but Sunday really illustrated the stark contrast in these two organizations in the sense that they both had their backs against the wall. The Ravens were 0-2. Cowboys were 1-1. I get that. They weren't 0-2, but they had just been embarrassed by the New Orleans Saints in their home building. And you see how they came out and played compared to how the Ravens came out and played. Fourth quarter aside, how they played the first three quarters. That to me was the biggest, such an indictment on Dallas and a contrast in these two organizations that as much as, yes, you are 1,000% correct in the sense that they need to find more consistency. There's no doubt about that. If this team wants to be 12-5 and having a chance to be the number one seed and playing deep into January and finally breaking through and getting to a Super Bowl. We all know that. At the same time, you can't do all that in September anyway, no matter how great you might look right now, or how mediocre you might look, or how inconsistent you might look. It's a long ways away. But to see that from Dallas, but also to the Ravens crediting their offensive line and how much those guys heard. And I mean, Derrick Henry mentioned it. Lamar Jackson mentioned it. I mean, those guys were shouting out Daniel Faalele. Do I think this means Daniel Faalele is going to be fine moving forward? Far from it. I have no idea. But because it's not as though this game is now, okay, this is who you are in the first 2 weeks didn't matter, right?
Let's see
It's
him pass
all.
block 32 attempts, and
And
if Lamar gets blown up three times because of it, and plays
then we're
get
back to
blown up.
talking about it the way we did 2 weeks ago,
Well,
right?
and that's about playing from not playing from behind, right? Because they're only going to pass when they're behind. I don't think they're going to be a primary pass first offense in any way, based on the way they've constructed the offensive line, based on the money they've spent in the running game, based on the fact that they want Lamar running the ball because he's running the ball like a running back. He's touching the ball a lot and moving around and design plays. And I don't want to say Greg Roman's back, but certainly the game plan on Sunday was a lot more Greg Roman than it was Todd Monken. We're going to distribute the ball and move it around. I don't know where the tight ends are in this. If you're not going to pass the ball, or if you don't want to pass the ball, or if you don't need to pass the ball. Second and one, hand the ball to Derrick Henry, 12 more yards, right? Like, maybe you don't need to pass the ball. They didn't. They got a 22-point lead without passing the ball, and on the road. By the way, that NFC thing's weird, right? That it's uncanny, isn't it?
I mean, Dallas specifically, considering what happened to them the week before against the Saints, I wasn't surprised by that. But we've talked about this. A Lamar Jackson led offense. I think, first of all, the Ravens have had plenty of games like that against AFC opponents as well. Let's be clear. One, you have to have the personnel. Two, you have to have some familiarity with it. And if you don't, and if you can have the best scout team look in the world in your mind, it's not Lamar Jackson. It just isn't. So that's just such a different element. But, I hear everything you're saying. First of all, they're going to have to throw the football this year. You're not going to do this every week. I mean, you're just not. And I don't say that to be disparaging about what they did specifically Sunday. Like I said, with the way Dallas had, the way their front had looked, the way their front seven had played the previous week, absolutely. Run all over them and neutralize Micah Parsons rushing the passer and DeMarcus Lawrence rushing the passer. It was a good plan. I don't think that's the plan every week moving forward. So that's where we still come back to. Okay, how does this offensive line build on what they did? How do they build on this? The run blocking looked better. I think you saw a lot of zone. You saw them running to the edges a lot. That I think that's going to be that absolutely I think is going to be the key. That's what Derrick Henry's always done best. So much of Derrick Henry is a misconception as far as what he truly does best. It's not really running between the tackles. It's getting him
Stretch
to
and
the
just hit,
perimeter.
right?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's not to say he can't do it at all or that you shouldn't be able to do that at all. I mean, that's still something that I have a concern about against more talented defensive fronts. But for
Well,
what they
guys
needed to
always have
do
to take
on
a
Sunday
side
on the
angle at
road.
him. I'm seeing this, that when he
Yeah.
cuts like that, it's not about him Earl Campbelling and carrying linebackers. It's about him slashing with those thighs and you having to come at him from the side. And if you don't have the right angle, even if you have the right angle, you might not have leverage. And he's got that stiff arm, right? And so, hey, dude, my love affair with Derek, I loved him first. Tell Chad, tell John, tell them all, tell Derek, tell King Henry that I called him His Highness when I was shopping Houston Oilers jerseys in the offseason. So, I mean, I'm a believer in what they're putting down and how to do it. I'm just not a believer that Lamar needs to be. This whole idea was for Lamar not to be doing that as much. And to your point, in the Monken offense, distributing the ball as the MVP of the league, I'm just not sure they have the right chops for that on the offensive line to do both the way Marshall Yanda could, or Kevin Zeitler, or name anyone that's not 6'8" and 340 pounds, which is his body's not built to do that.
Well, they've got to figure out how to do that. because you're gonna have to do that to win a Super Bowl. You're gonna have to do all. It's got to be balanced, right? You got to be able to play different ways. I mean, we saw this, right? I mean, Kansas City was able to shut down their running game, not entirely, because Lamar scrambling became their running game, but you're handing it to Derrick Henry didn't work it quite as well that game, right? It didn't work as well between the tackles against the Raiders until they finally got outside on a couple plays as the second half went on. So you've got to be able to do it. You've got to be able to have balance. They're still needing to figure out this offensive line. I'm still not remotely convinced that the group that we saw starting on Sunday is going to be the group that's starting the second weekend of January or the third weekend of January, but for what they needed to do Sunday, which was they were in a desperate spot, to your point, the idea of falling to 0-3, the idea of being in a position now where everyone's questioning you between the ears and everyone's questioning what's under the hood and everyone's questioning, all those questions then about who's getting the football and all the different things you want to talk about, right? That can create dissension within a locker room. You avoided that by winning on Sunday, and you did it the way you needed to do it, and the smartest way to do it against that Dallas front that, again, soft. That's a soft football team, and I could even speak to Cowboys fans about that. Well, one of my cousins, who's in his early 50s and one of the oldest Cowboys fans I know, the last 30 years I've been hearing him say the Cowboys are soft, right? I mean, even when they've been good under Dak Prescott. So that was absolutely the right approach for Sunday, but it's a week-to-week league. And the next challenge, Buffalo coming in into town, you got to figure out a way to play 60 minutes. And yeah, Derrick Henry and running the ball is going to be a part of that. But I'm guessing they're going to need to make more plays in the passing game on Sunday. And look, Lamar Jackson again is prepared to do that. He's coming off of a season where he set career highs in passing yards and yards per pass attempt and completion percentage. But to your point, their offensive line's got to raise their level to be able to do that at a more consistent level across the board with the operation. So it's still an incomplete football team. We know that. It's very, very evident come the fourth quarter that not everything is perfect for this team. But the offensive line, at the very least, yes, it was a step in the right direction. We'll see what happens against Buffalo. We'll see what happens against Cincinnati. But they've got to find more consistency. You said it. I mean, consistency is key at this point. And the difference here, and I know you took some shots at him earlier in the game, and I give him credit for how he played as the game went on, specifically the fourth quarter. But Josh Allen and Joe Burrow, they're a step up from Dak Prescott. I mean, they just are. And Dak Prescott doesn't stink or anything like that, but Josh Allen coming into town, your defense better be ready to play 60 minutes, or you might not have. We've seen that. We saw this play out a couple years ago with a Buffalo comeback in Baltimore in the slop, and it was rainy, and
Why
the
talk
Ravens had a
about
big lead.
Lamar running up the middle too much and running into linebackers? Josh Allen will run into Roquan Smith if he wants to. I mean, not that he'll win the battle or whatever, but Roquan doesn't see that either much either, right? Roquan doesn't see a quarterback saying, "I'll run into your ass." You know what I mean? Like, so this is a different fourth quarter in a 4-point game on Sunday night. And Luke, I want to say one more thing before, because I will get to Buffalo, and I definitely want to talk about all that. And I'll be at Costas on Friday, and we're going to be doing the Pizza John's thing. We got baseball all week. And I don't want to let this pass, because you and I aren't getting on a plane to go to Arlington to sit at the kids' table next year where your clubhouse badge gets threatened and all. I'm not going to do any of that today. I'm just going to write a letter to Mr. Rubenstein. I'm sure he'll fix things for me because he's a big fan of Luis. Oldest living Hall of Famer, by the way. Dallas, soft. I didn't do a lot of Dallas last week. I didn't even call Shireen, right? Hall of Famer Shireen. I didn't talk a lot of Cowboys. Mark Messina is my Cowboys buddy. My buddy Dave Muir. You mentioned they're like cockroaches. We all got one. The late great Saul Schwartz from Hollabird Sports, who was my friend forever. Just guys from Pikesville. He lived and died Dallas. Messina's up in the middle of nowhere. I get it. Muir grew up in Hillendale. And it was, I mean, the Cowboys people, they haven't won much in 30 years. So if you have one in your life somewhere, They, you know what I mean? Send a prayer their way for next Sunday, and for Mike McCarthy. So I was going to write he's a lame duck coach. He's always, you know, he'll be lame duck till he's not anymore. But you and I went to that complex last year, and I want you to speak to this because I had Michael Gelkin on last week. Michael retired from the industry after 15 years. He's younger than you. He's 38, and he did this. All he ever wanted to do was cover football. And I've known him for 15 years. Knew him when he was a kid, covering the Chargers, covering the Raiders. He moved around franchises that moved. He told the whole story. He lives in Silver Spring now. He's going to have a normal life. He's got a daughter, a wife, like all like being a normal guy, unlike you and me, having Chad Steele tell us where to stand and what time to be here and having John decide what time practice is and living your life around the whims of, you know, literally sports teams and all of that. You and I took a day down in Arlington. We had some good barbecue. By the way, Zach Orr is the reason we were at Heart 8 Barbecue in his hometown. They didn't say it on the broadcast. It was Zach Orr's hometown too. Zach's a Dallas guy. Unfortunate. Same thing with Brian Rausen. Very unfortunate. Get the hell out of there. And we went to the complex. Dude, I've been doing this my whole life, even though it's not acknowledged by Chad Steele and Greg Bader, but acknowledged by everybody in the audience. I've been in hockey rinks in Colombia watching guys trying to go play with Mario Lemieux. All my life, I was in the dump out in Owings Mills when Tessendorf's trying to figure out where to put helmets, literally. You know, police thing. I've been out when they build the training facility in Owings Mills, which you go in every day, and they've had two or three remodels out there. I've been thrown out for 3 years. I probably won't recognize the building if I went in there at this point. And everything's Johnny Bravo'd and made for television now. That Dallas experience down there and what we saw in the 2 hours we walked around there, you say they're soft. It's the first thing I thought of in the middle of the game when they're getting their ass kicked, and all the players that leave there and go other places, and they're like, "Oh yeah, when I go to Owings Mills, it's like even though John's a hard ass and he's, you know, his integrity's, you know, skinny, they're all about football out there. You know what I mean? Like they're just all about football." And I talked last week even about like getting rid of Westminster. This week, by the way, Luke, you'll want to listen to this, okay? Because we're friends in the real world. I sat for an hour with Reverend Al Hathaway and with Martin Knott on their podcast back in May. Like literally at the pool, 100 degrees, early in the morning, cup of coffee, in sandals, literally at this beautiful pool in Vegas, and did an hour with them talking about the experience of being in this business and like, good things, bad things, things that have changed through the course of time. And I meant not just our treatment, but like that thing in Dallas, it's a different world for football players. And I don't know, like I was in Oakland 5, 6 years ago when Del Rio was there, and it was crappier than the old Owings Mills ever was. I mean, the Blast had better facilities because Ed Hale mandated. Not the Orioles in spring training in '97 down in Florida, where you know Scott Erickson's making milkshakes and you know, they're lifting dumbbells on the parking lot pavement. Cal Ripken and Roberto Alomar were doing that in 1997. Like, what's going on in Dallas is a whole training thing that, to me, when I watched it as a reporter, as somebody that's done this for 40 years in every sport. Everywhere. I've been in all of these facilities and I've seen how they've all grown up and become, you know, the Nebraska football gym and like all the sports, like all of it, all of it. But what Dallas has is a different level of Dubai. And I don't, it needs to be said the morning after we play them because you and I did take a day to tour it. Now, I didn't even talk about it at all last week, but in the aftermath, you're like soft in Dallas. My uncle knows that. Everybody knows that. Go down there and just, I told Ravens fans, if you went down there and didn't tour that thing, you really kind of missed out. I'm glad we did it.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's not like I spent a full week there and got to see how the team actually functions and operates
Dude, we
and
walked in the
conducts their
locker room
business
though
there. But
on a practice day. We did. I mean, come on, don't act like we didn't get the backstage. We had a backstage tour. We saw the guts.
we peeked in for 3 seconds. I mean, I guess my point, I don't know how much of it's that and how much of it is like, are you tough? Are you building a team the way you need to? I mean, the entire focus of their offseason was, oh, you got to sign CeeDee Lamb. Oh, you got to sign Dak Prescott. What improvements did they make to their football team? Sure as heck wasn't at running back. I mean, don't get me wrong, I wouldn't have given Tony Pollard a big deal, but you brought Zeke Elliott back. The guy you got rid of a couple years earlier because he was washed then. So, I mean, I think if anything else about that facility, and look, it was beautiful. I mean, it's a campus. It's not just a training facility. It's like basically like a little town, like a village. It's remarkable, but that franchise has such an aura of what they used to be rather than what they've been, calling it a spade for what they've been for 30 years now.
Call a
I was
star a
a
star.
kid. I was a kid. I was a kid the last time they were in the championship game. The last time they won the Super Bowl, I was, what, that was January of 96, I guess. I was 12 years old.
Can I make a shameful
Gonna be
admission about
41
that
next
day?
week.
Can I make a shameful admission? I'm willing to do this. I was never.
You rooted for the Steelers, didn't you?
I not only rooted for the Steelers. I've. Let me say this, all right? I'm just. Are you a priest? No, you're just a deacon, right? You're not really a priest.
I'm a deacon, yeah, which is not, I don't preach.
Can I confess sins to you?
I mean, you could, sure. That's not re what we really do with my denomination, but sure. You.
I waved a terrible towel that day. I'm never going to say that again.
Surprised there isn't a.
There is a picture of it. Dave Peitsch
I
has
just
it.
saw a purple lightning bolt strike right behind you.
I better duck. Luke Jones is here. We will get serious about the baseball team. The Dallas thing, I just wanted to bring that up because we really did see it. And I'm telling you, dude, when the doors are 14 feet high and everything in there is made of marble and cherry wood and oak and all I could think about, and I'll leave you with this, all right? Have you ever watched the football exploitation movies of the 70s? Have you seen Semi-Tough? Have you seen North Dallas 40? I'm being serious. Not well, I mean, I could throw the remake movie Burt Reynolds, The Longest Yard. I could throw that in, but I'm not going to because that was more like late. I'm just talking about like North Dallas 40 with Nick Nolte and Mac Davis in the hot tubs, right? You know, where they're peeing in the hot tubs and they're smoking weed. Imagine that. All those years ago and Semi-Tough, they went into a room to do est and they got this German massage. Toughness, toughness, toughness of the 70s, and take these pills, I'll make you feel better. And raiding the drug cabinets, all of the 70s stuff about toughness and the Steelers and Jack Lambert and all those John Facenda and football is a rare game. And then you show up in Dallas, and it's like, dude, I've stayed at the Four Seasons. I'm not bragging. I've been at some Ritz-Carlton's. I've been in some really nice places in my life. I'm blessed. Those weren't the places where I built WNST. You know what I mean? Those weren't the places where the shit gets done. Real, the hard work gets done. And when I was down there looking around, I'm thinking there'd be some special people to come in here and work here and win a championship here. Because I think the idea of being there and walking around is, oh man, I want to live at the Four Seasons all day. I don't know. I don't know, dude. I'm just saying. I mean, and I'm a poor kid from Dundalk who appreciates those places when I do visit. But there's a point where if you live there, I wouldn't want to do this every day. It wouldn't be as important to me. So just that's, we call these wise conversations. That's just my wisdom. And that's how I feel about the Cowboys. And I'm not saying that North Dallas 40 is the way to go or what the way the Ravens do it or the way other people do it. I'm just saying, like, I walked in there and it smelled like old money and it smelled like my bread was going to get butted and it didn't smell like hard work to me. I'll drop the mic on that and you can respond however you wish.
That brand trumps what that brand was originally built on, which was winning. And go back to the 90s, go back to Roger Staubach, all that,
That was an
right?
interesting verb
They
you
are
used being in Pennsylvania.
living off of that. And living off of that trumps actually adding to that legacy.
Did I just admit
That's
that I
my
touched the
opinion
turf of
from afar.
town? Did I admit that? I think
You
in that
did.
segment.
You're never going to live that down, by the way. I mean, that's even, and I know you like Mike Tomlin. You've done
The
charity work
Ravens
with
didn't even
Tomlin. You've
exist
spent
then,
time with
dude.
him.
The Ravens didn't even
Yeah, that's
exist.
what I'm saying. I mean, it's just, that's wild.
That's how much I hated
Terrible
the
town.
Cowboys.
You
That, dude, that's really a
terrible
reflection.
town.
Neil O'Donnell played for the Terps. I tried. Yeah, I tried. I tried. And you know what? Marvin was there, so I can. Oh, you know what? Rod
There you go.
Woodson, my favorite
There you
all-time
go.
football player, Rod Woodson, was there. So there, all right? I'm going to admit it to Woodson next time he comes on the show after he's done working for the Ravens and when I can go back to being his friend again. Luke Jones is here. He is Baltimore Luke. I am Nestor. We're going to get some baseball in, I promise. We're going to be on Friday at Costas. I am wearing my State Fair shirt. We postponed the State Fair show with Angela Alsobrooks. Brooks. I'm hoping to make that right before the election. Larry Hogan has an offer out as well. I am non-denominational about all things, including football. We'll come back, talk some baseball. Luke and I are with it. It's Baltimore Positive. We're playing the Yankees in their big games this week, too.